today on Working in the Suburbs.
What's the beef with you and jazz music? I say, well, I really hate jazz.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Friday to all. Hope you didn't over-celebrate on your St. Patrick's Day yesterday. Of course, it's nice to have a holiday name for myself, and I appreciate that everyone goes out of their way to wear green and celebrate. I wanted to give you guys a quick book nook before we head into the weekend and get ready for next week, which will be new music from February week, and we have some real exciting stuff for you. I wanted to discuss a book I recently read. To do that, folks, we have to open up Patrick's Book Nook. To the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle? I want to thank the talented and lovely and very tall Mr. Mike Wagner for collaborating with me on that Book Nook theme. And when I say collaborate, Mike did all the hard work. The book I have recently finished reading is called The House That Train Built, The Story of Impulse Records, written by Ashley Kahn. And I'll tell you, it's really, really an interesting book, especially if you're interested in the history of jazz, if you're interested in record companies, if you're interested in the way American music evolved, and also American entertainment business. It's all good for those reasons. So first, I'm going to read a little something from the source of all human knowledge, Wikipedia, because I think it's important to have a little background on how Impulse developed. And this really tells it the best that I've seen, so why not? And I quote here from the source of all human knowledge, Wikipedia, Impulse's parent company was ABC Paramount Records. And it was established in 1955 as the recording division of the American Broadcasting Company, ABC. In the 1940s and 50s, ABC benefited from the U.S. government's antitrust actions against broadcasters and film studios who were forced to divest parts of their companies. In the early 50s, ABC acquired the Blue Network radio stations from NBC and later merged with the newly independent Paramount Theaters chain, formerly owned by Paramount Pictures. And a quick aside here, folks, from the quote, back then, movie companies, movie film studios like Paramount also owned theaters. And of course, what movies do you think you're going to be able to see in your local theater? Of course, it's the Paramount Pictures. They're not going to play the competition. And that's where the antitrust part came in. Under the leadership of Leonard Goldston, the former head of Paramount Pictures, the company sought to establish itself as a cross-media force in television, theaters, and sound recordings. It enjoyed early success with TV with the Mickey Mouse Club, a joint venture with Disney. And so, basically, Paramount formed a record label to promote music from TV shows and movies, as well as to compete with other major companies doing the same thing, like Columbia and MGM. They started off by signing light pop singers like Edie Gourmet and Paul Anka. You know, they put out the Mickey Mouse Club stuff. They put out some stuff from movies. But Paramount also had Lloyd Price, and they had a big hit early on in the rock era with Danny and the Juniors doing At the Hop, which, of course, was later made much, much more famous by Dash Riprock, as we all know. In 1960, Paramount decided to dip their toe into jazz, and they hired a man named Creed Taylor, who formerly was a producer and arranger with Bethlehem Records, and who had gotten into music while a student at Duke University. Taylor became the producer, and he was the A&R guy as well. He wanted to use the name Pulse for the new jazz label, but he learned there was already a label with that name, so he added the prefix to make it Impulse. And one of the cool things about Impulse Records, folks, if you picture it in your mind, and I'm holding here a copy of an Impulse record, Mono A-32 in the catalog, the I in impulse is exactly the same as the end of the word. So they added an exclamation point. It was impulse, but the I was an exclamation point with the dot on top. And of course, the exclamation point from an exclamation point, the dot is at the bottom. So it had a nice framing of the word. And also, they used a very distinctive black and orange design, which was a color that not any record labels were really using at that time. And the other thing they did was they hired really professional quality photographers, and they took these dramatic shots of the artists and they bled them all the way to the edge of the record. So it wasn't framed in any way. It was just this dramatic photograph. And they had those very distinctive black and orange spines, orange on top, black on bottom. Always had the Impulse logo there. And many of them, like this one, I'm holding actually a copy of the John Coltrane Quartet's Ballads record with McCoy Tyner, Jimmy Garrison, and Elvin Jones. And a lot of them were gatefolds. And they had the nice liner notes in the middle. And of course, their slogan, the new wave in jazz, feel it on Impulse. The new wave of jazz is on Impulse. And they were able to sort of make this independent record company under the umbrella of a major corporation. So it really kind of was an indie supported by a major. The focus of this book basically is what happened to Impulse and how they've steered their way through jazz music, and of course still to this day exist as a important label. So let's go back and I'll tell you just a little bit more before I dive into some of the cool things about the book. But Creed Taylor achieved early success by signing Ray Charles. And Ray had just ended his contract with Atlantic Records, and this was an amazing deal that he ended up striking with ABC, Paramount / Impulse, because he not only got a lot of money as a bonus, but he also maintained complete control over his own recordings and masters. And that was not something that had really happened at the time. And I think Ray's old label Atlantic was pretty hurt by the fact that he left them after he supported them, but who wouldn't for this kind of sweetheart deal? I mean, it was like one of those deals, like a no-brainer deal that really made a huge difference in the way recording contracts for artists were structured from this time forward. The first record Ray put out was the classic Genius plus Soul equal Jazz, gave the label its first hit and became the fourth highest charting album of Ray's career, which is really saying something. Almost anything off that Ray Charles record, and it would be sounding really perfect. It's such a classic, and you know, led to the fact that Ray could work outside of the R&B sound. And I think, you know, that's something else he wanted to establish. And I'm not just a R&B shouter. I can do other things. And he could play jazz, he could play ballads, and of course later issued an important country record as well. Let's see. Other big early hits for Impulse were Out of the Cool by Gil Evans, who was Miles Davis's producer. And the other thing Creed Taylor did was sign John Coltrane to the label. And that turned out to be pretty important. Also, one of my favorite early ones on Impulse. And if you don't know this record and you're into jazz, really check this out. It's called The Blues and the Abstract Truth by Oliver Nelson. And the band featured Freddie Hubbard, Eric Dolphy, Bill Evans, Paul Chambers, and Roy Haynes. It's really, you know, an all-star superstar band. So I want to tell you here about Ashley Kahn's book. It's really fun. It's not necessarily a strict history of Impulse. So, of course, you get all that when you read it. But what I like about it is that in each chapter, while you're learning the history, each chapter has about 5 or 6 albums that they focus on. So they go inside the recording of the record, as well as giving you some history on how that record did and what it did for Impulse itself. It's really cool. So, for example, chapter 2, Coltrane Live at the Village Vanguard. That was a huge record. Chapter 3, Mingus, Black Saint and the Sinner Lady. I mean, that came out on Impulse. And Archie Shepp, 4 for Train. And, of course, originally released on Impulse Records, John Coltrane's The Love Supreme. You'll learn a lot about that album by reading this book. And, of course, later free jazz stuff that Coltrane did, like Ascension and some of those other things, are covered. Then there's, you know, they go into Chapter 5, for example, Between Jazz and a Hard Place, 1965 to 1967, when things are really changing in the jazz world, and different kinds of sounds were coming in, and Impulse was right there sort of riding it. Then Chapter 6, Impulse After Train, and then later in the Impulse story, the label moved out west to the West Coast, to Los Angeles, and got into a little bit of sort of that, you know, West Coast jazz style. It's a little bit of a cooler style, a little more relaxed, a little more laid back, and didn't really pick up the tenets of hard bop. It's a really interesting story in the history of jazz. It's pretty fascinating. And, you know, Impulse served as an inspiration for many other labels, because they remained committed to quality over quantity. They had a very distinctive design aesthetic that they stuck to. They took advantage of being part of a large corporation that had deep pockets that could afford them to release experimental records that didn't necessarily have to sell a lot of copies to be considered a success or to support the label. This was not a situation where one successful record paid for the next. It was the records were pretty much going to come out, and they let talented producers, engineers, and of course artists just do their thing. And sometimes it wasn't necessarily a critical or commercial success. Sometimes it was, you know, free jazz to the extent of being very difficult for jazz, quote unquote, purists to enjoy, but definitely rode the wave of evolution in jazz and the changes that were coming out. So if you're looking for a good book to read, immerse yourself in some history and just have a lot of fun and teach yourself a few things about jazz. I mean, I consider myself a, I don't know, medium hardcore jazz fan. I think I know a lot of the classics, and I've gone off on a few tangents here and there and learned a little bit more. But it definitely taught me a lot, and I love it. I really love it. Can't recommend it highly enough. And actually, in this case, I did read it on the Kindle, but I would recommend trying to get it on the actual paperback or hardback because of the illustrations and the design aesthetic. So I've definitely got that on my list to buy if I come across it in the wild. So thanks for listening, folks. I hope you enjoyed this book nook. Give you a little shot of literature here to close out your week. And stay tuned next week when my co-host Jim Linehan is back and locked and loaded, and we're going through all the new music picks that you folks sent in. There's a lot of really fun ones, and some really good music came out in February. It was a really good month. I will leave you now to play your Impulse jazz over the weekend, and of course listen to Suburbs Radio at suburbsradio.com. And on behalf of my co-host Jim Linehan and everybody in the Rock and Suburbs community, I wish you happy weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
see if I can't put this into terms you'll understand. Say you had 12 beer.
Oh, okay, all right.
All right. Now, let's say that 4 of those beer represent the Pogues. Another 6 represent the Gypsy Kings, and 1 beer is shared by the Chieftains and Ladysmith Black Mombasa.
Hold it, that only leaves 1 beer. I'll never get drunk on just 1 beer.
Exactly, Bob. But learn to nurse that beer, and before you know it, you'll be loving jazz.